Hi, guys. My name is Nifty, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting here at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. They give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear cut of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, and I must have this. Tonight, all the way from Noonan, from the Turn-In Group, she has a sobriety date of July 7, 2018, Cherie M.
My name's Cherie Macaroni. My sobriety date is 7-7-2018. Trying to find my spot on the wall because my people sit right in the front row. So I'm like, damn. And I'm so grateful that in y'all's format it doesn't say, you know, this is a spiritual program, so please don't cuss, because I still have a hard time with that. But before I qualify myself, I'm going to qualify myself with something funny. We were sitting at the dinner table, and one of my group members shared a story about another group member that when he was going on family vacation, he filled his windshield wiper fluid up with liquor. And I'm thinking, well, that is an awesome idea. You know, like only an alcoholic is going to think that that's a great idea. And I was thinking on my way over here, I first walked in the rooms in 2013 and had almost 4.5 years of sobriety before I went back out in November 2017. And I was going to speak because when you got a year down in Valdosta, you would share your story. And I was going to speak, and my sponsor's driving me to the meeting house, and there's a liquor store almost like the Triangle Club, like right by the meeting house. And she was like, are you nervous? And I was like, well, when I was driving by the liquor store, I thought a shot would really make this go over much better. So I know that my thinking qualifies me to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm super grateful I get the opportunity to speak today. I said no one time to someone that knew, they could see I was going to go back out. I moved up from Valdosta to Noonan, Georgia, a little over 6 years ago, I guess it was. And I was struggling finding my place in AA up there because they were doing shit different than what it was done in Valdosta. I had been the GSR of my home group, and I thought I knew everything there was to know about Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when I moved up there and they were doing everything different, I just was completely a fish out of water. Like, everyone knew me in the two meetings in little Valdosta, Georgia that there was, and I just couldn't find my way down there. And this lady could recognize it. And we were talking about this at dinner, and she said she always would sit at the front of the meeting, and she would say, you know, the answer was letter C, and I always thought she was crazy. And she pulled me off to the side when I was dipping out of the meeting before the Lord's Prayer, and she said, you're going to drink again. I'll be your sponsor. And I said, no, you're not, and no, I'm not going to drink again. And I was probably drunk not too far after that. And I had went back out on some other substances, but I hadn't drank yet. So in my mind, I still believe that, you know, because Alcoholics Anonymous says alcohol on the book, that it didn't really mean other substances, that, you know, I yet would need to pick up a white chip. And so I started going to therapy, and I'm telling the therapist, like, you know, I won't have to pick up a white chip if I go back because I didn't take a drink. Well, one night, you know, the Big Book tells you that one day it's going to come in between you and God. You know, a sponsor ain't going to save you. Your friends in the fellowship ain't going to save you. But if you don't have a power greater than yourself and a connection with that power, that is going to come in between you and God. And that's what happened to me. And I said that night when I took that drink, as long as I don't drink alone, I'm going to be okay. And that was probably the first lie I told myself, other than the ones when I started doing the other dry goods. I was very fast back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because my disease picked up extremely faster than it left off. This time I came crawling in. I was mad the first time, and I learned a lot the first time, and I'm kind of going to talk about a sentence that I have written in my big book that I have carried with me from an old timer in my old home group. He said, the same man will drink again. And I never really understood 100% what that meant. When I was coming back into the rooms, I was still drinking. I did not know if I wanted to stay inside of the rooms again. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go back through the pain that I went through the first time. Because, I mean, it was like shitting razor blades. It wasn't easy. I lost a lot of stuff when I first came into the rooms. I came in with a lot of stuff. I had a big house, a nice car. My kids were in private school. And within about a year period of time when I first got sober in 2013, my family was on national news. My brother went to prison. We lost all of our money. Everything was going away. I stayed sober 4.5 years by the group is all I can say. I mean, I believed in y'all enough. That kept me sober. Thank God. And I learned a lot while I was there. But when I came back into the rooms, it was different. I knew there was something not okay with me this time. I was in this meeting in Peachtree City. This lady shares across the room, and I still to this day have no idea who this girl was. And she talked about she had just moved up there. She had relapsed. She'd had like 7 years of sobriety. She couldn't figure a way around. She just told my story from across the room. And I was coming in a little bit. And some of the ladies that was at dinner with me tonight was telling me of them seeing me in meetings, and I don't remember it. So I was drinking and going to meetings and didn't even know it possibly. I mean, I don't know. I can't piece the time frame together. But I remember her sharing her story from across the room, and I was like, oh, my God, that's my story. I finally shared. I don't really remember what I shared. I don't remember what I said. I remember being pissed, and I remember knowing that if I stayed after the Lord's Prayer, all these women were going to try to hug me. And so, of course, I don't want no one to touch me. So I leave the meeting as fast as I can. Or this is what I remember. And this lady chases me out the meeting, and she gives me her business card. And that probably saved my life because I was in that meeting that day. That girl sharing and then being chased out of that meeting probably was the God lining everything up just the right way to get me sober again. I remember her giving me her card and her being the only one that I really would talk to because I am angry. And she wanted me to read the big book. And, of course, I wanted to say, do you know how many times I've read the big book? Like, why I got to read this big book again? I mean, I was just so defiant about it. And she wanted me to pray. And I'm like, to your God, F your God, you know. And then I fired her. And then I went off and found somebody else. And then she fired me. But anyways, you know. I have struggled for many years inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous trying to find a God of my understanding. And I knew that I was powerless over alcohol. Like, I know that. I know that if I pick up a drink today, that I will be right where I left back off. And I know that my life is unmanageable. And I also know that I can use anything in my life to make it unmanageable. A relationship, food, sugar, coffee, work. I mean, work is a big thing for me. You know, I can make my life completely unmanageable by throwing myself into it just like I throw myself into alcohol and other things. Understanding the insanity of the disease, I also know what the insanity looks like. It's like I have this big house with this really long hallway. And I heard this speaker named Polly P speak one time about being a child abuser. And I thought I wasn't a child abuser because I didn't beat my children. But she talked about how her kids would have to step over her to go eat, you know, because she was drunk the next morning. While I was sitting in the back, we were in Jekyll Island at the Serenity Weekend, and she was speaking, and I was sitting back there with my best friend, and I started crying because I remember that big, long hallway that I put this lock at the top of the door so my kids wouldn't leave to go up to the front of the house because we had this big pool and I was scared that they were going to drown. And I would leave food in their rooms before I passed out that night. So when they woke up, they would have food. You know, I thought I was at least feeding them. And I thought, damn, I'm a child abuser. You know, like my kids, my daughter, still to this day, my son will call my daughter and say, I have a bellyache. What do I take? You know, and God willing, I'll be sober 5 years. It's taken me 11 years to get 5 years. But my son has been raised by my daughter, and still the effects of alcoholism are in their life every day. You know, I still try to improve that. But, you know, that's like the insanity of the disease. I will tell myself that I'm being a good mom because I'm at least putting food there and I'm locking them in the back of the house. But that step three, man, made a decision to turn my will, my life over to the care of God as I understand him. That step still baffles me. I've had a sponsor made me rewrite it, you know, to where it says made a decision to turn my thoughts and my actions to someone else other than Sheree. I still don't get down with that one very easy. But I will say that a couple of years ago, someone told me, and this kind of ties into the same man will drink again. Someone told me to quit looking at the God of my understanding because I cannot wrap my mind around the God of my understanding. But what I can get down with is the God of my experience, and that's what she told me. And that completely changed the trajectory of the way that I thought. Because the God of my experience is the guy that told me to write in my big book early on when I first got sober in 2013. He gave me a big book, and he told me to open up to the first page, and he asked me what was in it, and I said nothing, and he says, well, that's how much you know about alcoholism, so sit down and shut up for the next 90 days. And then write, the same man will drink again. His name's Larry. And I was like, well, okay. You know, and then I had these old-timers tell me, like, to put the cotton in my mouth and take it out of my ears and shit, and I really didn't get down with that, but... All that stuff has stayed with me all these years, but the God of my experience has done stuff like the lady that chased me out of that meeting. I had moved up to Noonan and was in this weird space, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I had quit my job, and I'm trying to get sober again, and she posted this thing on Facebook, and I called her, and I was like, you think I can do that? She's like, yeah, I think you can do that. And so, like, I went to this class, and I took all of this test stuff, and, you know, I don't know if you think like I think, but in my mind, I'm stupid, I'm ugly, I'm not good enough, nothing's ever going to turn out my way, and everything's always going to be a shithole. You know, but she always said everything was going to be okay. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to believe because she believes. And so I believed. And then I failed one time. And then, you know, this other lady that helped me out, I call her crying the whole way back from failing because I'm like, well, I'm just a big damn failure. And she says, well, why don't we do it again? And so I did it again and passed. And so then I passed this, you know, thing that turned into a career. You know, and I didn't even think that I would like it or that I would do good at it. Never thought that in a million years that I would be where I'm at today. You know, the God of my experience is that I get to, like, suit up and show up to my daughter as at Ole Miss today. And for anyone that doesn't know me, you know, I don't have a husband that takes care of my kids. I'm a recovering alcoholic that's, you know, got 4.5 years of sobriety. I suit up and show up, maybe if I got graded, probably a C. You know, I'm not 100%, but I think I'm pretty good half the time. And my daughter is, like, raised by me and is at Ole Miss on a scholarship that she got through ROTC. And, like, she's sane. She's normal. She goes to fraternity parties. I see her on, like, that Life 360 app, and I'm thinking, how much is she drinking? You know, do I need to go over there? And I'm like, you know, she's not like me. She might not be like me. I don't gotta, like, force her to think the way I do, and that's a big deal. But I think some of the biggest stuff, and I'm just gonna preface me talking tonight, I quit smoking cigarettes 21 days ago. And the normal Sheree is out there chain smoking cigarettes before I speak. And I'm peeing, praying, I'm chain smoking cigarettes. And when I was asked to speak at this meeting a couple of months ago, I sat over there in that seat and I was miserable. And my sponsor asked me to come and she asked me to speak. And I'm like, shit, I got to say yes to the universe. And I was not happy. And this morning I called my sponsor crying, 12 o'clock. And I said, I do not want to show up. I do not want to go up there. I do not want to speak tonight. I don't feel like I got anything to carry. And I cried to her for an hour. you know, and here I am. Because if I don't show up, then I don't get to keep it. My life has been completely changed by the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was raised in the carnival business. My last name is Macaroni, too. So I got picked on my whole life, you know. I was the kid that your parents did not want you to hang out with. We would play these carnival towns, and they would lock us in these gates. So there was always this stigma of prejudice around what my family did. I found out that if I partied with the bad kids, that I kind of got along with that group. You know, I got down with, those were my type of people. They still are my type of people. I still like to hang out with the people that like to party. I just am sober today. But I carried that through so many years of my life. And then I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I hear stories about people that put, you know, booze in their windshield wipers so their wife doesn't find their bottles anywhere and they figured out a place. And I'm like, damn, that's my kind of people. You know, my mom is at this party this weekend and she's telling a whole table of how Cherie showed up in robes and how I didn't answer my phone and how drunk I used to be. And I'm just like, well, I mean, what did you expect from me? You know, I mean, I am an alcoholic. That makes complete sense to me. So I remember coming into the rooms for the very first time and I could not figure out if I belonged with y'all. But someone shared something and I felt at home. Probably for the first time ever anywhere I'd ever been. Y'all didn't care what my last name was. Y'all didn't care who my daddy was. Y'all didn't care if y'all were getting a paycheck from me or not. Y'all didn't care who the hell I was. All y'all cared was if I got sober or not. And that was the first time that anything made sense to me. And I didn't have to compete against anybody. I didn't have to be up here. And then y'all started telling me to read this literature, and there was stuff. I had to find, this is one of my favorite parts of the book, because this is what has happened to me. It says, yes, there is going to be a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you'll find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. And I remember reading that for the first time and thinking I used to hear those old-timers say that they were a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell you're grateful for, because I sure as hell don't want to be sitting in here forever. And, you know, Friday night I'm sitting in a meeting, 7:30 at night. I'm sitting in a meeting. I'm driving up here on a Monday to come to a meeting, to the place that gave me life. And I say this all the time to anyone that says to me, I got to stay in these meetings, and I'm like, I get a life outside of these rooms because I have a life inside of these rooms. It's not all about, you know, I did not want to be here. My sponsor knows that. I cried for an hour, like my eyes hurt from crying. There are some days I wake up still to this day and don't give a shit if I walk out the door or not. I'm still an alcoholic. There are still character defects that I have. I'm still working on them one day at a time. It is a gold star day, I am told by my sponsor, if I don't take a drink. And for someone like me that does anything to avoid emotion, love, fear, anger. I mean, I kind of like anger a little bit still. But I'll avoid everything like a plague. And I'll avoid it with alcohol and other forms of alcohol. But see, I remember when I first got sober, too, there was this guy that came into the rooms. And this old house, there were chairs around the side. And I was sitting a few chairs down from him. And he came in and some guy beat the shit out of him with a baseball bat. He got drunk, said something to the girlfriend. 3 days later, he burned up in a car that he couldn't get out of from drunk driving. And I was told by the other people in the meetings that he'd been trying to get sober for years, couldn't get sober. I watched an old-timer, 18 years of sobriety, die of alcoholism. I watched him go back out on Listerine. I remember a girl coming into the meetings, and she hung herself. I was about 3 months sober. And I sat in the meeting one day, and I asked a guy named Massimo. I said, you know, oh my God, like all these people are dying. And he's like, that's what alcoholism will do to you. He says, you'll die just like that if you go back out. You're not promised a seat back in this room. And I look at it that way because, see, I'm an impact drinker. You know, I have knocked my teeth out at Christmas parties. I have dove into a pool. My children have found me outside the pool. I show up in places that I don't even know where how I got there. I drive my kids around and your kids around because if you trust me enough to let me take your kids are going to go with the ride with me too. And hopefully they come back. I heard a girl in a meeting a couple weeks ago talk about pouring a drink for her dad and how proud she was. She had like 3 or 4 or 5 months of sobriety. And I am a child of an alcoholic too. My dad still drinks. I can't imagine pouring my dad a drink. Because for me, I have to protect my sobriety with everything that I have. Because I'm going to lose everything that I put in front of it. That means my children. That means my house. That means my car. That means my job. That means anybody that's got any type of respect of me now. You know, not that I'm saying they should have any respect, but I do have some that love me and care about me. Y'all told me that I get to come in here and recreate my life. And that's exactly what has been able to happen. I'm not the same person I was when I first got sober in 2013. But I'm also way better than I was when I first got sober inside the rooms again in 2018. In 2013, you know, in all those years, I stayed sober by the fellowship. When I moved up here, my sobriety changed to something way deeper. I knew that it wasn't the fellowship that was going to get me sober, but it was a relationship with God. It was a relationship with the fellowship that was deeper than anything that I'd had before. Because, you know, I was still doing shit like getting 13th step in line about that. If you don't know what that is, ask your sponsor. I wasn't doing the whole 4th step to the full extent. I was finding the loopholes in the sentences. Instead of reading the sentence for exactly what it says. And I think somewhere in the big book it says that we have to fully have a spiritual experience. Can't just, I think it says like no half measures. And I thought, well, if I skipped 3, but I did all this service work, that was good enough. And that was not. And today I don't even really do service work. I mean, nobody ever asked me to sponsor them. If somebody asked me to speak or chair a meeting, then yeah, I'm down with that. But I'm not on the same level of service work as I was when I first got sober because I knew that wasn't what was going to keep me sober this time. And when that lady told me the thing about the God of my experience, I had to start looking at the way things started lining up in my life. I believe that God strategically places people, places, and things in my life. Like, I show up to this meeting, then I gotta speak, so damn, I gotta stay sober until tonight. I mean, shit, for the 3.5 months, I'm trying to stay sober because I can't not follow through with, you know, responsibilities. Because, you know, that was a character defect I used to have. I left my dad at the airport one time. He still calls me to make sure that I'm going to be on time. But I am on time today, maybe a few minutes late, but not like I used to be. You know, when I think about what Larry used to say about the same man will drink again, and I think about who I was when I first came into the meetings, and I was talking to my sponsor today, and she was like, you need to make a list of all of the things that you're good at, or a positive list of myself. And, of course, I can never think of any. And then you need to think about the negative stuff, but really I can never think of any either. Since I walked in this room a couple of months ago, I knew my life was, I needed more. I needed more of what something was not connecting still. And I've been going to our sister fellowship. I'm being taught that I need to take care of myself. And that night, I left this meeting that night, and then someone said something to me about not taking care of myself, because what I'll do is, like, I don't eat for days, I chain smoke cigarettes, I drink 17 cups of coffee, I still, like, live in this more mentality of, like, if one coffee's great, then 25 are even better, you know, if one cigarette's great, then I'm going to make sure I have a carton everywhere I go. Like, I had to smoke, like, constantly. And so within this time frame, like, I got involved in this new weight loss program. And, first couple weeks, I'm running on a treadmill, and I'm thinking, man, I can't breathe. You know, like, I can't breathe. I'm doing okay, but I can't breathe. I've been talking to my sponsor for a year and a half about not smoking cigarettes anymore, because I thought being sober was just good enough. And for me, it was bothering me, because the job that I have is kind of professional today. People trust me with a lot of money today. I would hear their kids say, "It smells like cigarettes in here." And I knew that that was me. It wasn't where we were at the time. And then some, you know, when this weight loss thing came on, because, you know, I like to eat chocolate, because y'all told me early on when I got sober, like, if I eat chocolate, that was going to help with the craving. So, of course, one Hershey Kiss is not enough. So, you know, if I got an emotion, then I'm going to buy a bag of Kit Kats, fun size, a bag of Reese fun size. And then if it's Easter time, those Easter eggs that are the hard ones with the chocolate, those are really good. And I didn't eat any of those this Easter. But anyways, the moral of the story of what I'm trying to tell y'all is, like, I've been standing inside of these rooms for a little bit of time, and y'all keep pushing me to be something better. Because when I came in here, I was a liar, cheat, and a thief. I don't know if any of y'all can relate to that. But, you know, I was a liar, cheat, and a thief. Nobody could trust anything I said. My mom still is skeptical, I think. It doesn't matter how long I've been here. She still thinks that I do all this other stuff. I cheated at every relationship I've ever been in. Married, cheated. I stole people's money. I made sure I wrote, you know, different numbers down sometimes when it was time to settle up certain things. I came in here with no absolute idea of what y'all really... Now, if y'all told me I was going to have to do all this shit, I wouldn't have stayed. So I'm really glad no one told me that. I'm glad no one said, "Oh, we're going to take you to all this stuff. We're going to make you do all this stuff. You're going to have to write all this stuff." I mean, God, I got so many damn notebooks. I'm tired of writing some shit down. The beauty about those notebooks, though, is it does get to show me where I used to be and where I'm at today. And the beauty about, like, coming, being asked to speak, and, like, I'm sitting there thinking, like, wow, a lot has changed in the last couple of months. I was really miserable that day that I came here that night. Like, I was almost forced to come. Not, she forced me to come, but it was like, do you want to come? Or maybe she might have suggested that I come. And I don't know if y'all have a sponsor like, well, no, she ain't like that. But what I do know is, if it is suggested for me to do something, that really means I should do it. Because I do know in the first volume of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it said clear-cut directions. It didn't say nothing about no baby suggestions. If you want to recover like the first 100 people, they did these clear-cut directions. And so I do know that I am a rule breaker. That is one character defect that I don't always want to change, because there's this meeting house that I go to. I don't know if y'all think like me or not, but it's at a church, which a lot of meetings in our area are at a church, and there are 6 handicap spots. And I'm thinking, why is there so many handicap spots here? And I make sure I park in one of those handicap spots. Still to this day, I mean, I don't know if that's dishonest or just being a rule breaker. But it occurred to me the other day that it is at a church, and there is probably a lot of elderly people there that go to church on Sunday. And I'm thinking, what the hell are they using all these spots for? Who needs 6 handicap spots? Well, no one's going to know. I'm just going to park my car in this one because it's closest to the door. But I showed up the other day to that meeting, and I was like, you know, I might need to quit parking in those handicap spots. So that's taken me about 4.5 years to realize. Maybe all those handicap spots are really needed on Sunday morning, being that I don't go there then. My mom was here this past weekend. Every time she comes, I do always kind of have this lull that happens afterwards. Just because of being a child of an alcoholic, I live in a lot of chaos when she's around. But the one thing that I'm always so grateful for is that, you know, I have this fellowship of women in my life today. Before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I only associated with the men because I worked in a very male-dominated world and, you know, always had to have this persona of that I could hang with the men. And I didn't really realize how important female relationships were until I moved up here and got sober up here, because our group has a lot of women in it. The last 4.5 years, I've went through a lot of ups and downs, and the women inside of the rooms are what keeps me sober. They picked me up from my house and taken me to meetings. They've made me get out of the door when I'm emotionally crashing. They remind me that I'm worthy and that I'm worth more than what I really think I am, because even after sitting inside the rooms for just a little bit, my mind still speaks very negatively to me. I do know that there's a God of my understanding out there, and I do know that the God of my understanding has given me a life that I couldn't imagine. You know, I got 2 great kids that were raised by an alcoholic mother that if I got what I deserved, I would not have them. Both of them are very well-rounded, and it's because of y'all. I mean, my daughter was 8 years old when I first got sober, and my son was 4. So Joseph's about to be 16. So all he knows really is me being sober. He never knew that I had relapsed. Lola did, though. You know, when it talks about salt through prayer and meditation to improve a conscious contact with God, I remember saying, well, I don't know how to meditate. And someone said to me that it was thinking hard. I was like, well, I do that shit all the time. So I figured that I got the meditation down pretty well. But someone also told me to start writing my prayers. And about the time that she asked me to speak, I started doing that again. And I started writing my prayers. And I was reading back from a month ago. I mean, I started reading a lot of stuff today, because my sponsor was telling me, like, all the positive stuff that I have done in the last couple of months. And I was reading it, and I could see it. And I could see that, you know, we all get to have these different relationships with God, and all of ours looks very different. And that's what's so cool about Alcoholics Anonymous, is that someone can tell me the way they get down with their God, and I'm like, ooh, well, let me try that, and maybe I can get down with God a little deeper that way, because I don't know how to do that. And so that person had told me to start writing my prayers because my mind moves so fast I can't get it to stop all the time. And that's how I started, you know, praying and meditating. And I don't really know what, you know, the power to carry that out is, other than, like, I suit up and I show up every single day and I let God guide and direct me. If that's to say yes to something, if that's to show up for my kids, if that's to do whatever, because Cherie used to not show up to anything. You know, I show up to stuff today. And having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I don't know if I've had a spiritual awakening. There's a part that says in the big book that we will be rocketed into the fourth dimension. And I think for me, the spiritual awakening is like, I can have a thought. I was at a restaurant one day, about a year ago, and there was this coffee martini floating across the room. And I thought, well, I never got to have a coffee martini. I wonder what that tastes like. And instantaneously, It came in my head, one will never be enough for you. It don't matter if you never had a coffee martini. One will never be enough. For me, that is what I believe is a spiritual awakening. I had someone tell me numerous times, like, I needed to take my ex-husband back to court. I had given him a house and a divorce when I first got sober, and he was ruining my credit. And I was trying to get my financial stuff together. Took me years to get my financial stuff together. Took me 3 years to work up the nerve to take him back to court, too. And so finally I take him back to court. I did have to pay a little bit of money to get this house back, but I was getting it back so I could clear my name. So I flip this house, and I'm sitting at the closing table, and the attorney gives me a piece of paper and says, take this to your ex-husband. He needs to sign it so we can close the deal. I'm like, fuck, what? I went back to court. I did all this. I take the paper, and I'm sitting in the car. Only people in the car is me and God. And I look at that paper, and I say, damn, I could forge his name on this paper and bring it back tomorrow. Because that's what the old tree would have done, forge that shit. And I didn't. I drove clear across town to my attorney that I had paid for, and I said, here's the paper my ex-husband has to sign. And I did not forge his name on that paper. That's how I know I've had a spiritual awakening. Because I think when it says in the back of the book that it's a changed mindset, a changed attitude and actions or whatever, I've been taught not to memorize anything. I was taught years ago not to memorize anything. So I don't know where shit is unless y'all tell me to look for it. But I do know that a spiritual awakening is a changed thought and actions. And so when I decide not to forge someone's name on some paperwork, or I went through this other thing recently with a government department, and I was pissed about it. And I get the paperwork, I got to fill it out, and when I'm looking at the paperwork, I can't lie. I mean, I'm unable to lie today. And so I filled it out exactly the way I was supposed to, and I let it go. And for me, that's a big deal. I'd pick it back up a little bit, but I really did let it go. And I got a paper in the mail that, you know, told me that everything was fine, whatever. But I remember thinking to myself how proud I was that I didn't manipulate my words, because I'm a manipulator. I know how to manipulate what I'm going to say to make it be best for me at the end of the day. And y'all taught me that my motives have to be pure. And even if I got to pay something or I got to clean it up, as long as my motives are pure and I'm telling the truth and I got honesty with it, that, you know, it's going to work out the way it's supposed to work out. I know for me, if I don't come to meetings, suit up and show up, and sit in a room full of people, it ain't the meetings that's going to keep me sober. I can come in here and I can spew some great shit for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, and walk out here and live a whole different lifestyle for the other 23 hours a day. It ain't the meetings that keep me sober. It's the people inside of the rooms that guide and direct my life and get me into a place where I'm willing to look a little bit deeper at what I'm doing, what I'm saying, how I'm living, who I'm hanging with, what's going on with my kids. It's when I'm truly honest with myself enough to say I'm not okay and I can't do it like this anymore. And I can't find those people if I don't come into meetings. I can't find those people if I stay at home. I can't find those people if I don't suit up and show up. So I don't know if anyone's like me and don't want to come to meetings all the time. I mean, I'm always amazed at the people with 20, 30 years of sobriety and they come into meetings, because I love the old timer. I know a lot of people get pissed off because the old timers say all this shit. But I love the old timers because the old timers are the ones that have stayed sober through stuff, not through like, oh, my dog got out. You know, oh, my boyfriend left me. Oh, my car broke down. You know, they stayed sober through the death of parents. through, you know, divorces and relationship changes and children going to, they're staying sober through some big shit. I love the old timer. I had this old timer say to me recently, his name was Wynn Miller. And he used to be at the 12 and 12 Wednesday night meeting when I first got sober. I could barely read the big book when I first got sober because I'd been drinking so long and I didn't understand the words. And he said that step one was my admission ticket to a new life. And I could get down with what he was saying because it was like the carnival business. It was a ticket to get on the ride. And I remember thinking, I can get down with that. And he was dying of leukemia last year, blood cancer or something. And I called him and I told him how important he was to me. And like he had changed, he was part of changing my life. Like I, you know, didn't want him to leave this life without knowing that he helped change my life. And he said, Sheree, boy, we are some special people. We get to live two lives. The one before we come into AA and the one after we get into AA. And he says, if the last 33 years are the best of my life, he said, if I got to die today, I'm okay. And I thought, wow, what humility. And I'm crying, and he's not. He knows where he was going to be fine. But he also knew that Alcoholics Anonymous had changed his life and his family's life. And he knew my son is not far away from being gone. And I had children really young. And I used to be very resentful of the fact that I was stuck with these kids. I'm not that way today. Like, I genuinely am sad that my kids will be gone. That is a huge difference in who I am today. And he said, honey, you almost got it where you can go just take care of you. And the one thing I will say is being completely broken. I don't want to say completely broken. The day I was asked to speak to come up here. Maybe being really sad and upset. I don't always know how to share my emotions with the right words. I have started learning how to take care of myself. And if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, for y'all, for me getting to suit up and show up and talk about what a shit show I am 90% of the time, but 10% of the time I get to show up and say that there's some really cool shit that's happened in my life. There's a part in the promises that says you will be amazed before you are halfway through. And I was told we never know when we're halfway through. So why do we want to stop if we ain't going to know if we ain't halfway through or not? So anyways, I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you very much for listening to my story, and I hope I didn't screw it up that bad.
Sheree, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. That was pretty awesome. You guys enjoy that? Me too. Thank you very much.
I used to hate my pain. Avoid the feelings like a winter rain. I'd run away, hiding the hurt with a drink or an angry word. Until the day I could not deny the healing calling from deep inside. It was a love that was here to mend. My broken heart could be my friend. On the other side, I will rise above the mountains, here to climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful for it all. On the other side, there is peace beneath the pain. A tears that I can't explain, washing away the fearful wounds, bearing a light for my life to bloom. On the other side, I will rise above my